Well, welcome to everyone. This is Dr. Paul White, co-author of The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, along with my good friend, Dr. Gary Chapman. And this is our podcast on making work relationships work and talking about how to apply the five languages of appreciation to daily work life. And I am pleased to have with us today Vanessa McGee, who is joining us from South Georgia. And Vanessa, you and I met recently at a conference in Washington, D.C., and we were just getting to know each other briefly. And when you found out that I was the co-author of The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, you immediately said something like, you know, we've used your book, We're at Work, and it really helped us. And so I was excited to hear that. And then I had one of my team members call you, and she said, you've got to have Vanessa on the podcast and have her tell about the experiences you had. So welcome. And Vanessa, first, just tell us a little bit about yourself and sort of your work background and where you were working when you were using the five languages.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Dr. Paul, for allowing me. This is one of my passions. I absolutely love talking about this. So thank you for this opportunity.
Sure.
My husband and I, we just recently relocated to a small town in southern Georgia called Thomasville, Georgia. We've been married for 33 years, and that marriage has taken us to several states. When we got married, we lived in Arkansas. We moved from Arkansas to Nashville, Tennessee, where we spent about 25 years. We were in Dallas for a couple of years, and now we're in Georgia. So we've had a lot of interesting life experience in those years, but all through our marriage, we've either owned our own businesses. We've had a lot of businesses in transportation and the service industry, but part of that time was spent in the church world. So my husband spent 14 years functioning as a business administrator and an executive pastor at two different churches. And then we've been in the nonprofit world for 16 years as well. So we've had our hands in all kinds of business and in church activity our whole married life. But actually, it was in Nashville. We were at a nonprofit, and that's where we first learned about the five languages of appreciation. And I can tell you a little bit of a backstory about how we got there.
Sure, that'd be
my
great.
Husband has always been the one in the business role. He's been the one over operations, the one over the organization, and how the business actually functions. And I've been pretty much more of a support role. Sometimes the role was paid and sometimes it was unpaid,
right.
But it was more of the support role of I really took over the relationship and the people aspect of whether it was the church world or the business world and how we could better grow and really understand and empower our employees. So I like to say that he was the CEO and I was the REO. I was the relationship executive officer of wherever, he was serving. But about 2007, we were in a transition. He had gone from the church world to an organization in 2003 to walk them through a transition. Their president and CEO founder had passed away, and so he had been brought in to walk this organization through a transition, and there was like a lot of employees, and there was just a lot going on in those first few years. But in 2007, we had a relationship issue that happened, and this will make sense for you whenever I tell it to you. But we had gone to Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, which a lot of people are familiar with, Pigeon Forge, Gatlinburg area. And we had taken his parents there for their 50th wedding anniversary, and he wanted to take them to this place called Dollywood. Most people are familiar with Dolly Parton, and she has a place there called Dollywood. Well, I'm more from the I like to have fun, and I just wanted to go out to eat and go shopping, and I did not want to go to Dollywood. And what happened when I told him that I had talked to his parents about not going, his response to me not wanting to go to Dollywood was just, to me, it was very abnormal. He was upset. He was hurt. And what proceeded out of that was several hours of what I want to call intense fellowship, because we don't fight. We don't have arguments, but we do have intense fellowship. And I kept on saying to myself, this is bigger than Dollywood. Mm-hmm. Like, there's something going on here that I'm not getting and understanding.
Hmm.
So shortly after that, I was made aware of Dr. Chapman's book, The Five Love Languages.
Right.
So when we read that book, all of a sudden, the light bulb went off, and it was like, oh, This had nothing to do with Dollywood. This had everything to do with his quality time. Mm. And what I took away from him was quality time with his parents. Uh-huh. And, of course, you know, I realized that was words of affirmation because words are everything to me. So we literally, that, like, revolutionized our marriage because all of a sudden we had this new language and we started understanding frustrations before we started understanding it was because we didn't understand each other.
Right.
Well, from that, we just started teaching, you know, everybody at our church and everybody that came into our world, we just started, you know, sharing this information because truly it was, you know, it was like revelatory to us. So then, I'm not for sure when the book came out, around 2011,
2012. Yep, exactly. Yeah, 2011.
Yeah. So when I saw the book and it was like, oh my goodness, you know, this was so impactful to our marriage. What could it do for our workplace? So that's kind of how we actually got introduced to the book. I saw it and I knew that the love languages were so powerful for our relationship. Mm-hmm. We just wanted to see how it would, you know, how we could transfer that into the business that we were currently serving.
Right. And in fact, that's how I got involved with the whole project as well. My wife and I had read probably several times because I'm a slow learner. The five love languages, and it really, I would say, saved our marriage. And then I was working with a family-owned business situation where the father and son just were really missing each other. And I thought, you know, I think maybe the five languages could apply. So I pursued Dr. Chapman for a year, and then the project went on from there. Another interesting connection, though, is that just a couple months ago, I was at Dollywood, and I had been invited and came and did a training on the five languages of appreciation with 375 of their supervisors for this summer. So
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, and we're moving forward and helping them implement that. So it's exciting. They're a great bunch of people.
They're amazing. And so it's literally Dollywood was the pivotal point that actually opened our eyes to this. So that's amazing.
Cool. So then you started to use the five languages of appreciation in either your work setting. Tell me sort of how did that work? Did people read the book? Did you have people take the inventory? Did you go through our training process? I mean, a lot of different places sort of apply it in different ways and even over time. So just describe the process a little bit for what you all did.
Yeah, so for us, what we did is we had weekly staff meetings. So we just set aside meetings and we began to teach on the actual languages, you know, of appreciation. Mm-hmm. And then we tested our employees. Mm-hmm. So they all had to take a test. Mm-hmm. And then my husband, he's like Excel spreadsheets are his best friend. So he created an Excel spreadsheet and put everybody's language in a, you know, the spreadsheet with their scores so we could actually access it at any time. I had done a teaching on their personalities, and then we did the teaching on the language of appreciation. So we just created a file mm-hmm. that we were able to pull up each employee and what their language was. And then we, on purpose, we started finding ways to practically implement and just begin to reward and appreciate our employees based off of this information. Mm. But it was more through, they didn't read the book.
Right.
I read the book and I digested it to them and then we just talked about it. Mm-hmm. So it kind of became part of our language and our culture that we just really talked about it. But it was because it was very new at that point.
Right,
whenever
right.
we rolled it out, it was very new. I taught it, we tested, and then we just began to implement mm-hmm. Systems based off of that.
Cool. Well, some key points about that I think help make it work for you. One is, first of all, you know, not everybody wants to read the book. You know, I mean, we have the book in print form. It's in Kindle, you know, an ebook. It's also an audio book. And in fact, the recent version that came out at the beginning of 2019 here, I actually went and read the audio book to try to give it some personal life and so forth. And so you have that. And in the back of the book, there's a code for people to take the Motivating by Appreciation inventory, or in a lot of settings, people don't want to read the book or they're not going to, and that's fine. But you can buy codes as a group for people to take the inventory. And then, yeah, you were early on, and so you sort of did your own Excel spreadsheet. Since then, we've created some, which is great. I mean, we've created some little nicer looking kinds of resources that are free on our website, the appreciationatwork.com website that it's basically a group profile where you can chart each team member in their primary language, secondary language, your least valued language, which is sort of the blind spot, and see that as well as be able to sort of copy and paste into a template people's action items, right? Because just knowing their language is helpful, but it's not specific enough because the actions within the languages differ for different people. And we've got some other resources. One more I'll mention is just what we call a cubicle poster, which is literally like an 8.5 by 11 poster that can have the person's name, their primary language or secondary, and their top two or three actions that they can put at their workspace. And just those visual reminders we find to be really helpful. But it's cool that you guys had a plan and a process. And I got to tell you, the groups and organizations that, you know, the five languages make a difference are people that work the plan, right? I mean, you can read right. it, you can talk about it. And it is helpful, I think, to develop a common language with one another so that if somebody says, yeah, my language is acts of service, you know, even if we've had other departments and managers, you know, learn about that so that at least they know what they're talking about. But really, it's taking that time and initiative to, whether it's weekly or every other week or, you know, in some form of meetings over time to talk about it and try to drive deep. And then you guys did another great step is, you know, you took the initiative as leaders to figure out ways to show appreciation in the ways that are meaningful to the different team members.
Y'all have made it. Your website has tremendous resources available to people. So y'all have made it very easy to show appreciation through and make it just as practical. And that's what I love about it. It's extremely practical. So,
thanks. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. And in fact, for others, you know, the appreciationatwork.com, there's a learn tab and we've got, I don't know, a boatload of videos and articles. And we're going to be putting up these podcasts as others. For people to listen to so that, and on lots of different topics, right? I mean, whether it's peer-to-peer appreciation, if it's people that are difficult to show appreciation to, all that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, that's the goal, right? I mean, it's fine to have information, but if people can't apply it, it doesn't really help that much.
Exactly.
So give me some examples of things that you saw along the way. I mean, as people tried it, I mean, it could be, you know, some things that didn't work. Things that, you know, really stood out that, wow, that really impacted people. Can you share any stories about what you saw?
So for us, I feel like the whole culture and the atmosphere of the office shifted. When we got there, there was a lot of mistrust and among the employees and pretty much a little bit more of a negative environment. Mm-hmm. And when we began to implement, and a lot of it was extremely practical things that we began to do, but when we began to, and I just like to call it, you know, we begin to speak the language, everybody's language, and begin to appreciate them. It created a trust, and it was honoring. It was extremely honoring to the employees, but it turned the environment from one that was a little bit more negative to a very positive environment. And then for me, the biggest thing, I just love to have fun. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was a way that we could really introduce, you know, fun into an environment. We wanted to really celebrate and empower the employees and make them feel honored mm-hmm. and appreciated. So when you begin to do that, the whole culture began to shift. And for us, too, we realized that a lot of times the danger is to see an employee as just an employee and not to see them as a person. Mm-hmm. So we realized that when we began to speak their language and when we began to talk about this important to their life, that they weren't just an employee. They were, you know, they were a husband or a wife, a father or a mother, a son or a daughter. These were real people. And when we begin to impact their life, then it has a ripple effect because they're able to take that knowledge and then apply it to other relationships. Mm-hmm. So for us, it was we felt like we were creating better people that in turn not only made the organization better, but it would affect their home life and their communities and their churches as well. So they begin just to blossom. I mean, they begin to open up, and it just created a very, very positive environment for us.
Wow, that's cool. Thanks for sharing that. And especially, yeah, that's just encouraging to hear about, you know, the ripple effect, which is really true. And in fact, you know, we've worked some with family organizations and a large, large majority of people in the workforce work for family-owned businesses. And if you can impact family and the business, it really goes a long way, isn't it? I guess it doesn't have to be part of the family business, just somebody that's working for you. And then they, you know, they're in a better mood, they're less stressed, and, you know, things go better at home. Tell me about this, though, because, you know, the concept of having fun at work is a little bit of a maybe an oxymoron for some people out there. Like, I can't imagine what fun looks like at work. And even the idea of a lot of people sort of equate appreciation with recognition and, you know, sort of mm-hmm. this task that they have to do that becomes somewhat burdensome, that, or it feels like it to them when they think about it. Can you tell us a little bit about the fun aspect? What did that look like?
Absolutely. Because that was my primary role, is to just bring this element to the company. We did a lot of different things. We had team competitions and different things like that. But one of our first, I would say, recognizable holidays that we really implemented this was Administrative Assistance Day. Mm. And so my husband felt like that everybody in the company helped to administrate the vision of the company. So he wanted everybody to be celebrated. Mm-hmm. So when we tested our employees, it was very interesting that very few of our employees were gifts. Mm-hmm. So it's hard. It's like, okay, now how are we going to recognize and reward people, you know, without gifts?
Right.
But so for Administrative Assistance Day, we had a breakfast, which it was for people who are quality time mm-hmm. to be able to fellowship and to enjoy one another and be together, mm-hmm. just to enjoy one another.
Yeah,
it was like a big.
It wasn't around a task. It was just.
It wasn't
out.
Around a task. It was basically. It was almost just like community. I mean, we try to create that community. So that particular day, we had a big breakfast and we would play games to win prizes. Mm-hmm. So everything was just kind of around. Everything that would be fun and everything that would speak their language. Mm-hmm. So for the people who are words of affirmation, my husband and I, we hand wrote a note really just talking about what we honored in them and what we celebrated in them and what value they brought to the company and how we were just honored to have them as an employee. So all of the employees got a handwritten note.
Okay, no, wait, let me stop you. I can stop you there.
Uh-huh.
Because so you didn't just say, and maybe, you know, you use their name and say, you know, Janice, so glad you're part of our team, right? I mean, a key part here is that you took time to think about and really identify the specific aspects, whether of what they've done or their personality characteristic, and communicate that versus sort of this global generic kind of message for everybody, right?
Absolutely. Now, we looked at things that specific traits that we valued and that we honored. And for some people, it was just their loyalty, their faithfulness, their punctuality, the way that they smiled, even if the jobs were mm-hmm. hard or whatever mm-hmm. it was. We try to find something that was for that person and just to tell them, like, we honor this in you. And, you know, this is a gift in you. Some of them, you know, did very specific things. It's like, for one of the employees, and this sounds really crazy, but my husband had an administrative assistant that she realized that he had to take medication at a certain time.
Hmm.
So she set a reminder on her calendar. So every day at 1 o'clock, she brought him a bottled water so he wouldn't have to get up. I mean, he's like, just so you know, that doesn't go unnoticed.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your diligence. And it was just a small act of kindness, but it got acknowledged.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times we take for granted small things like that instead of just saying, hey, I noticed that mm-hmm. and I notice you and thank you for what you do, not only to serve me, but serve the bigger vision of the company. So
yeah.
No, we try to be very specific with when we would do, you know, words of affirmation with people. And sometimes that would be publicly in a staff meeting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, everybody, I just want to give a shout out to Joe for meeting his sales, whatever it is. When somebody's words of affirmation, they just love to hear the fact of, I see you, we notice you, and thank you for what you do. And sometimes, whether it's a company email to celebrate a milestone that was made or whatever, we tried to, whether it was in person, through emails, or through handwritten notes, we really tried to be very, very intentional with words of affirmation.
Yeah. And the other part that I picked up from what you said was, you know, it was just a small act of kindness. And what we found is that it doesn't take much to make an impact. It's really like in acts of service, bringing the bottle of water to the other person, or it can just be helping out for 5 or 10 minutes. It's not like you're sort of rescuing somebody that's, you know, drowning because they're not doing their work. And so one of the things we really try to help encourage people is it's about getting the right action for the right person. And just like you
yes.
said, you know, praising in front of the team in the inventory, you know, after we identify somebody's primary language, we then have them circle back and look at about 25 specific actions within that language and say, for words, it might be compliment me privately. It could be it's fine to say something in front of the team. You know, a lot of people don't want to go in front of a big group, but actually I find that a lot of people with the people that they work with, they don't mind sort of, you know, being noticed or recognized verbally that way. Some people don't like it, but you can identify it that way. You don't make mistakes and create sort of a negative reaction when you're trying to do the right thing.
Right. And I think that's what the brilliance of that is because everybody is different and it's okay to ask somebody how they want to be appreciated. We actually created another document before we had information on your website, but it was a little bit more because it was more of a practical thing for items, but it was a list of favorite things and things you love and things you enjoy. And so to really get to know the person, and because you just begin to really, it's like you're important to me. So I want to know what's important to you. So how do you want to be appreciated? And how do you want to be, you know, so it makes so much, I think a lot of people, they struggle with the fact, is it going to be real or genuine?
Mm-hmm.
If I have to look at a sheet to do it. And it's like, no, it's just that information that you have on that person, that's just, it empowers you to really, really be specific and be intentional about what you do.
Right. And I think, you know, you're sort of pulling out key themes that we reemphasize in the new version of the book, and that is our employees are people. They're not just work units or production units. And I tease when I go and speak and train, you know, I have anybody raise their hand that's a person outside of work or maybe even at work. So because, you know, we have personality and we have other things going on, especially outside of life. We have whether it's a family member that's sick or we're dealing with our aging parents and trying to get them settled or a kid that's out of control or your car is broken. I mean, and those things impact daily life work. I mean, you're concerned about them. And if we don't allow for people to share and get to know one another as people, it feels very stale and stark, and people do start to feel just like a machine, right? It's just like all you care about is, you know, what my report looks like, my production, versus understanding that I'm having to deal with this other stuff as well.
Right. That's so true. And for us, we really wanted to, we just wanted to add value because I think that's one of, to me, that was the biggest thing that I took away from this whole process is to realize that inside of everyone, no matter if they're the CEO or the custodian of a company, inside every person is that desire to be appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see that and you understand, and it doesn't have to be, like you said, a difficult, it could be the smallest act of kindness towards that person, but when you take the time to really see them and to really learn their language, basically what you're saying is, I see you, I value you, and I appreciate you because you're a person,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily because you're an employee or whatever, or wherever your position is on the organizational chart. It's because you're a person, you have value, and that's what we honor about you.
Right. And one of the things that you touched on that we often have to remind people is that the employers, the CEOs, the directors, depending on what kind of organization it is, they need to hear some appreciation too, that it can go upline. And I know that people have shared with me concerns about, you know, looking like they're trying to manipulate or get in good with the boss or whatever. But the reality is that all of us get discouraged at time, right? And that we wonder if we're doing the right thing and if it's going okay, and we hit certain barriers and we're trying to push through them. And it's just nice to hear a word of affirmation or some kind of action of acknowledgement of what we're doing. And we need to not forget our supervisors and managers and the people above us. And, you know, there are people that try to use this kind of stuff manipulatively, but they usually are, it's sort of borne out over time. And so if that's not you, you don't need to worry about it.
Right.
And the other part I really like that we discovered is that initially Dr. Chapman and I really did focus on sort of supervisors and managers communicating this to employees. Fairly soon we got feedback that people were saying, you know, I want to know how to show appreciation or encourage my colleagues and my peers. And And so we really refocused not just a top-down kind of implementation, but across peers and colleagues. And one of the cool things about that is it's not limited by the org chart, right? It's not right. Sort of this linear thing. And so it can go across departments. So you can show appreciation for the person from IT that came and helped get your computer to work right, or somebody from facilities that came and cleaned up a broken, you know, lamp or whatever it might be. And so it's not limited by position because it's person to person, just like you're talking about.
Exactly. And when you're talking about people need to be, you know, the employer or the person up top needs to be appreciated as well. I was talking to one business owner, and he had done something very significant for all of his employees that he didn't have to do. And he's a words of affirmation guy, and none of his employees really thanked him for his gesture. Mm-hmm. And he said, had they only known how words affect me, mm-hmm. he said it could have changed the, you know, the dynamic of all the relationships. But he longed for his employees just to give him that word of thank you for what you did. So it does work. Everybody needs, right. Whether they're at the top, you know, the peer-to-peer, wherever, everybody longs to be valued and to be just to be seen and heard, I believe.
Yeah. And millennials have taken a lot of criticism here over the past few years about, you know, always wanting to be praised and, you know, the sort of stereotypical get a trophy for showing up. But I think it's sort of in the heart of man and in our nature to want to be affirmed. You know, I think it's an sort of a variation of wanting to be loved the way that God made us. And a lot of people, I'm a boomer and my generation and older, you know, people will say, well, nobody patted me on the head or the back growing up and I turned out fine. I can't, you know, praise everybody for every little thing they do, which is true. But whether or not we want to get into a sort of almost a philosophical argument about whether you should want to be praised or appreciated or we should have to do it, it becomes a moot point because people do want to. And when they don't feel valued and appreciated, they leave. I mean, we've got great data to show that almost 4 out of every 5 employees who leave a job voluntarily cite a lack of appreciation as one of the main reasons. Most managers and business people think they leave for more money. Research clearly shows that's not the case. There may be more money in the mix, but that's not what really sort of drove the decision, because it usually takes a pretty emotional kind of event to give the emotional energy to leave. So we can sort of argue about it. And at some point you just say, you know, things go better when they feel valued, you know. And
well, I go back as, you know, as a Christian, the Bible clearly states that we are created in the image of God. Mm-hmm. And he basically says that he inhabits the praise of his people. Mm-hmm. So if he loves to hear praise and inhabits praise, then we're created in his image. So we're gonna love that too. And which goes back to it's just as relationships in general. That's why a lot of the marriages fail, is because people do not communicate the appreciation. Mm-hmm. And so when you really learn that, when you speak that language, whatever, you know, it is of appreciation, whether you speak it through the words or you speak it through your actions or you're speaking through your whatever you're speaking, you're basically, it's okay, because we all have a language where we want to be appreciated. And I believe that it comes from, I don't feel like it's a selfish thing. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's basically an image of God thing. So mm-hmm.
As you worked on applying the concepts of the 5 languages of appreciation, did you have some pushback or resistance from certain team members or even certain leaders? Obviously, it sounds like you and your husband were full on board, but lots of times there's some people that aren't that jazzed about it. Did you experience any of that?
Not necessarily. Now, anytime you start doing something new, especially if people are, they're like entrenched in their ways and their thought pattern, you know, you might get a little bit of the murmuring or this is silly or whatever.
Right, right.
But I think most people, when they begin to see the benefits of what was happening, because my husband was the CEO, mm-hmm. we went from the top, you know,
right.
to the bottom, basically. But we implemented it. We led by example, by doing. Mm-hmm. So they began to see us doing things and talking about, you know, the languages and practically doing it. And we taught it in our staff meetings. And when they began to see the culture and just, I mean, anytime you begin to be affirmed and appreciated, everybody wanted that. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So we didn't necessarily get, you know, any pushback from anybody, but I will say that, like even my husband, so he had to overcome, because words, he's a very analytical man, quality time and acts of service, you know, are his things. So words were not normal, and they didn't seem genuine for him.
Uh-huh.
So he had to really get past that barrier of, are people going to think I'm not authentic by what I'm saying? Even though I feel it, it just doesn't feel right. Because he just wasn't used to expressing his words. So he, and we, when we started applying this to our marriage relationship, he literally put me as a calendar appointment, you know, to text Vanessa or call her and tell her that I love her, whatever. And people were like, that just seems weird. And it's like he had to train himself to get over, you know, that not understanding. Then it became like a second language to him.
Right.
But we just had to really teach people that even if you were uncomfortable, just pass, you know, just press through that and get to the place where you're comfortable speaking another language to somebody. But as far as pushback, we really didn't have a lot of pushback from any of the employees.
Yeah, you know, and what you're saying about the discomfort, I mean, as on a receiving end, we know that words of affirmation are the primary language for about 46% of the workforce. We've had 185,000 people take the inventory worldwide. So that means that over half of the people don't have words, and even more so. I mean, there's some people that, you know, they'll take it or leave it. But then I've had some, you know, I had a friend tell me, he said, you know, words just don't get it for me. He said, I grew up in a subculture where if somebody praised you, the next thing that was coming was an ask. So it's sort of like, hey, dude, you're looking good. Good to see you. You got extra 20 or can you take me downtown or whatever? And he said, when I get praised, a wall goes up in front of him and he says, I just, you know, wonder what they want from me. And so and there are other people that just, they're not real verbal, you know, more quiet. And so saying things is tougher. And so for introverts, we often encourage them to start with writing a note, right? Versus going up and saying something person to person, because that can feel more intimidating. But that whole discomfort kind of thing, because that's why we identify a person's least valued language. It's not a bad thing. It's not a weakness. It's just the language that doesn't mean much to you. And so you don't think about it naturally. But the problem is you probably have team members around you that have that language as their primary language. And if you don't make a plan, it very likely may not happen, whether that's quality time and you know, don't stop by and check and see how they're doing, or some kind of gift or whatever it is. And so, yeah, just because you do a reminder, actually, you know, we remind ourselves about things that are important, right? I mean, that's partly why we have holidays, is so that we schedule a time to celebrate and remember different historical events. So, yeah, it can become mechanical, but it also really is the starting point, like you said, to start a habit.
Exactly.
So when people started feeling valued and appreciated, and, you know, you said that there was less negativity, greater trust. Were there other things? I mean, you can either sort of tell a little bit about that or any specific things that you saw where this really impacted this one person and maybe heal a relationship. Wondering what other kinds of signs of benefits that you saw, and maybe not at a personal level, maybe at the business level, because we know from a research point of view that businesses function better when the team members feel valued.
Exactly. Well, there's I'll tell you a couple of stories. For one, it helped just in the interaction of employees. One of the ladies there, she was an accountant, and she was words of affirmation and quality time. And before my husband understood the languages, she would want to come into his office and just kind of, you know, chit-chat or whatever, and it was irritating to him because he's like, we have these reports to go over, we need to do this or whatever. And so, but once he really started understanding that that's a need for her.
Mm-hmm.
And so on Monday mornings, he allowed her to come in, and she might take 10 or 15 minutes she wanted to sit in the office. She wanted to tell about her weekend. She wanted to catch him up to date on the family, what was going on. And he just allowed her that time. And it changed their relationship because she was good the rest of the week. You know, the rest of the week she was awesome because he reckoned. And instead of being irritated at her, which a lot of times the reality is if you get irritated at an employee, then you respond in an irritated way, which they usually come back with irritation. So it's just this all of this
negative
irritation.
Cycle. Yep.
Exactly. And so once he began to understand that, I mean, it just, it created a whole new environment. But one of the girls, it was really funny because my husband's motto before this teaching was, I appreciate you by signing your check every 2 weeks.
Right.
If I didn't appreciate you, you wouldn't be here.
Right.
So, which I'm not saying is a great motto. But
no, I hear that a lot. I have a lot of employers say, hey, I pay them. That's my appreciation. Have a nice day. You know.
Exactly. And he thought that to reward and appreciate your employees, it always was, it was a monetary thing. You know, here's an extra $50, here's $100, here's a bonus or whatever. So in his mind, appreciation was a dollar sign. So after the teaching and implementation, he started thinking, okay, I'm just going to see if this works. So there was one girl, and her top two languages were physical touch and quality time. And so the company that we had was a nonprofit, but it was a Christian nonprofit, and which kind of you have a little bit, even though you have to use wisdom, you have a little bit more flexibility in the area of physical touch, because Christians love to hug each other. I mean, it's just
at least Christians
just
in the South. I don't know about Christians in New York, but.
Christians in the South love to hug each other.
Right.
So he was just walking by her office one day, and he just he pulled up a chair and he just sat down and he said, "Hey," he said, "you know, how are you doing today?" And she just began to talk to him, and she had a picture of her new little baby on the desk, and he's like, "You know, tell me about Taylor Ann. You know, what is she up to now?" And so he just began to engage her in a conversation. It probably was only a 5 or 10 minute conversation. And it was just more, hey, how are you doing? And after it was over, he said, you know what? I just want you to know I appreciate you. Thank you for everything you do. And I don't need anything. I just wanted to make sure you're having a good day. And he stood up to walk away, and she jumped up from her desk, and she just looked at him, and she's like, can I hug you? And he's like, absolutely. So, and in his mind, he thought, wow, what I would have thought would have been, you know, here's a couple hundred dollars in a bonus, 5 minutes of just saying, how are you doing today?
Changed
the atmosphere for her.
Absolutely.
So, and there's, we had stories like that all the time where it was just those small moments, the small gifts. One of the things that the employees loved a lot, especially people who were quality time, is that because, you know, we have fun. So anytime we would have like giveaways or we would do something like that, one of the things that we usually included in there was like a day off or 1 or 2 days off just to do whatever they wanted to. Because time is so, it's just like such a precious commodity. And when your employer looks at you and says, you know what, I value you, take the rest of the afternoon to do whatever you want to do with no strings attached. I don't need you to work, you know, late tomorrow or whatever. And I know that everybody doesn't have that flexibility. But when you really begin to speak someone's language and give them that gift like that, it just, I'm telling you, it just, it changes everything for the people.
Yeah, and that's so true that it doesn't take much as long as it's the right thing, right? And that's
exactly,
you knew what her language was and we're able to speak that. And the other thing just from that example is that in our way of thinking that time off really is a gift. It's not quality time. Quality time is more, you know, with a person. But it's a very powerful gift. And in fact, we've recently updated the inventory so that in the items on tangible gifts, we've included more about time off because that's more and more important, especially to younger employees. And also, just interesting about the hugs, I just wrote, I think it's coming out here soon, an article, a blog on the dilemma of hugs, because it really is, I mean, there's a personal element, but there's also a regional cultural issue. I mean, I lived in Atlanta for a while, which is sort of the South, depending on who you're talking to. And clearly side hugs are there and, you know, hugs for greeting and all that. But in New York and New Jersey, you know, Chicago, Wisconsin, it's less so. And we've had some incidents in the public eye recently about maybe unwanted hugs. One of the issues I think we sometimes have to look at, first of all, asking is always the most appropriate thing, right?
But
also what are the alternatives? I mean, what is the purpose or meaning of a hug? And I think there are different ones. I mean, one is excitement to see someone and you want to give them a hug and sort of celebrate seeing them. Another is a sense of gratitude, right? I mean, wow, I can't believe you gave me this gift, whatever it might be, and do that kind of thing. Or it could be support. And the reason the purpose is important, because then we can think of what are the alternatives, right? So if I see somebody that I've really been looking forward to either see or meet, but a hug isn't appropriate, you know, for me, culturally, looking them in the eye, smiling, and saying, man, it's so good to see you, and shake their hand warmly. I mean, it's not a hug, but it can send that kind of message. And sometimes we have to think through that versus, you know, I was at Vanessa, was a conference we were at a few weeks ago, and I had this woman speaker who I was greeting, and she said, I'm a hugger. And she just sort of grabbed me and gave me a hug. And I mean, it was okay. But I mean, that wouldn't go for some people, you know. And sometimes we have to distinguish between, you know, just because I need a hug or I want a hug doesn't mean that it's okay. And we have to sort of monitor that. But on the other hand, you know, and part of the reason we kept physical touch in the whole model, even in the workplace, is that we believe appropriate physical touch in the right setting and right relationship can be very meaningful, if not even healing. And so we didn't want to just create a touchless society, even at the workplace.
Well, and I think that's the danger in teaching people what is appropriate, because it, like in the state of Georgia that I'm in, I was listening to a teacher talk the other day, and they've created an environment where the teacher cannot touch a student at all.
Not even on the shoulder or anything, yeah.
And I'm thinking, there are children that's the way that love is communicated. So how do we empower teachers and employers and people that if a hug is not the acceptable form, just like you said, the eye contact, the hand, to really... Because it's a need. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is somebody's need, and this is how they're appreciated. And it just kind of grieved me when she was telling me, because I'm thinking there's a group of children that are being, the way that they're communicated appreciation and value is basically being removed from the system, pretty much. Mm. So, but that's why I think just this information and just the resources, it's like, okay, well, I can't do that, but what can I do, and how can I make it appropriate? How can I use wisdom, and how can I put this into place in our daily life?
Mm-hmm. So, and that actually reminds me of another resource. There's a resource put out by Dr. Chapman and D.M. Freed that's actually an educational curriculum for elementary school students it's been used in the public school setting of teaching them how to use the five love languages at school and in relationships. And so I don't remember the specific name, but if you go to the fivelovelanguages.com website and just punch in school curriculum or educational, you'll find it, because I think it's helpful and important. So let me ask, you've walked this walk for a while. How do you think about the process that you went through, and is there anything that you would do differently in trying to apply it, or you feel like it went okay, and or any advice you'd give to those who want to try to start to implement this in their workplace?
Right. For us, because we were like on the early stages of it. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So for us, I don't know that there would be anything that I would change necessarily, just because we were just kind of there when the whole thing was birthed, and we it's almost like we grew with the organization kind of deal.
Right.
So that part, I don't know that I necessarily changed, but there's just, y'all offer so much, there's just so many resources that, you know, for people to make their self available to, that are so amazing. But for me, I just want people, no matter where they're at in a company, I don't care if it's a company of one or two, I don't care if it's a Fortune 500 company, and no matter where they're at in the organizational chart, I believe that when people get a hold of this information, that they can affect change with the people that they interact with, that no matter where, they don't have to be in a leadership role to take this information and begin to apply it to their work environment or the people they work with or their school system or whatever it is, that you can be the change agent. Because a lot of times I feel like people feel like their hands are tied. If they're a teacher, it's like, well, I'm not the principal, so I can't do anything.
Right.
You can be the teacher that gets the book, that starts talking about it. Mm-hmm. To me, that's one of the, when people love something, they talk about it. And when you start talking about it and you see the change that's going on, it just, it ignites a fire within people.
Right.
So I think that people just need to take personal responsibility and read the book and begin to apply it the best that they can. If they have access to share it with their supervisor or, you know, the people that are around them, if they're in a school system, to try to get their principal or, you know, somebody. But don't wait on someone else to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do it yourself.
Well,
take the information.
I love that message. In fact, I had written a note to myself to make sure and make that point, because your situation with you and your husband being the leaders of the organization, I will say, is far less frequent than what we typically do. And that is, even when I'm invited to come in and speak to a group of leaders or do training, or if somebody's just starting, it's almost always in the middle. I mean, rarely are we at the top of an organization. That somebody in over a division or a department or just a few workers has found out about it and they want to try to use it and implement it. And that's where it usually starts. And what happens is, we often encourage people, just sort of, let's do a little pilot study or group here with small group of people that are interested in it, see how it goes. And a couple things. One is, other people see it and hear about it and they're like, well, how come you guys get to do that and we don't get to do that? My supervisor needs that. But also, it's a learning process, because we want to help make it specific to each organization's culture and structure. And some, like in schools, they will have staff meetings after school. And so we can help implement it weekly. In some medical settings and other places, they'll have like a half-day training. And so we always try to fit it with the structure that's there. But even more than just in the middle, we've had stories of people who were just, I shouldn't say just, but they weren't a high-level leader. They were a receptionist or a worker in a certain area, started applying it just with one or two people, maybe had the book on their desk, people asked about it, and it just grew from there. And to be honest, you know, the book came out in 2011, and since 2013, we've sold more books every year than the prior year, which is the antithesis of what typical happens. And, you know, we sold 360 or 75,000 books. Now we're selling 1,000 a week. And I think it's obviously God's blessing on it, but I think it's also the fact that it works and people find it helpful, and then they tell people about it, you know. And so I'm thankful and encouraged about that, and versus us having to get out there and sort of, I don't know, create some kind of whipping up about something that it doesn't work. So it's just sort of organic that way. And I know the five love languages has been that way at a higher level. I mean, they've sold, last I heard, was 15 million copies. And every year over the past 25 years, the sales have increased. And so when things work and are easy to implement, I think that's the other part of it, then people get excited and want to use it, because that makes their life better.
Right. And I think any employer or business person, if you came to them and said, do you want something that will bring positivity and change the environment and increase your bottom line? They're all going to say yes. And when you present, because it's just easy. It's not difficult. The only thing, you just have to be intentional, mm-hmm. and take the time to really do it. But mm-hmm. it doesn't have to cost anything as far as an ongoing, you know, right. I mean, you can buy the book, but it's not like you're asking them to spend a lot of money. You're asking them to basically educate themselves and begin to implement something that's extremely practical, that can literally change the lives of their employees. And not only their employees, I mean, this goes to their suppliers, their vendors, their customers.
Mm-hmm.
This has the potential. We talk about that ripple effect. You're going out and you're creating, you're speaking the language, you're learning other people. So it has a ripple effect to the whole business, you know, as a whole. So
sure.
it's powerful information.
Yeah, and we have actually good research that shows that when team members feel valued, a company's customer rating, service ratings go up, right? Because if you've got people that feel valued, they're more willing to listen and hear what the customer really needs or wants and take care of it, versus sort of pass them on to the next person and let them deal with it. So, in the most recent version of the five languages of appreciation, it's sort of called the business case for appreciation. And we've got over 50 research citations shown how it helps productivity and profitability and all that kind of stuff. So it's not just a touchy-feely, feel-good kind of thing. So, well, Vanessa, I really appreciate you taking the time and also just hearing your story with the five languages and how they've been beneficial to you as you guys have faithfully worked at applying them. So thanks so much for taking time to do that. And I hope things go well for you in South Georgia. Enjoy those Vidalia onions down there. Those are wonderful and sweet.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity just to share our experience. And thank you for just your heart in writing the book and what it's done for so many people. It's just, for us, it was a game changer, and we just appreciate your diligence in creating the book and all the resources. So for that, we say thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for saying that. And my language is words, so that gives me a little bump there. So that's, I appreciate that. All right. Well, you have a good rest of the day, and we'll be in touch, okay?
Thank you, Dr. Paul. I appreciate it.
Uh-huh. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
So that's our story for today, and thanks for joining us here on Making Work Relationships Work and learning how to apply the five languages of appreciation in the workplace. This is Dr. Paul White, and hope to connect with you again soon. Thanks.